obviously very influenced by Stevie Ray Vaughan, who also happens to have the same initials as I do, you know. But just,
the universe works in mysterious ways.
And I realized that he had a tattoo of SRV across his arm. I was like, it's meant to be. But yeah, and then BB King and everything, and he was a you know, performer, guitarist.
For many years, thousands of Nepalis have been moving overseas with the hopes of a better education, job, and lifestyle. Some find success in conventional fields, while some carve their own paths. Who is to say one is better than the other? Success is a journey, not a destination. So come on this journey with me, where we connect with our Nepali communities living overseas and explore their conventional and unconventional paths. My name is Sankalpa Gurung, and this is Hamro Yatra.
And welcome to the 17th episode of Hamro Yatra. Today we are joined by musician Sazan Raj Vaidya. Born in Kathmandu, Nepal, Sazan grew up in a supportive household where his interest in music was inspired and nurtured. This has helped Sazan into the musician you know today. However, what might fascinate you is that, along with his passion for music, Sazan has also been diligently applying himself in fields other than music. He's had a career in finance, working at the likes of JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, KPMG, etc., and is now pivoting into the field of software engineering. In this episode, we talk about the hard work that goes behind his songs that have captivated thousands. Blurring the lines between the so-called conventional and unconventional fields, Sazan shows us that you can pursue both and excel in them. It doesn't have to be one or the other. As always, if you enjoy these conversations, please share with your friends and family. Remember to follow our Instagram page at hamro.yatra for updates, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and leave us a 5-star review if you're feeling generous. Welcome to Hamro Yatra, Sazan. I'm so excited that you said yes to being on the show, and I can't wait to hear about your story today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've really like wanted to be, chatting with you guys as well. And it's my honor.
So we usually start with some icebreakers. The first question being, if you had to pick a superpower, what would you pick?
Oh, that's a great one. I'll just take a couple of seconds to think about it. I would probably pick time travel. Because for me, like, I could go back and already be like a music prodigy at 10 years old. If I can like start at 10, practice all the way till 16, and then go back to 10 and stuff like that and keep doing that over and over again. So yeah, that's probably what I do.
Sounds like a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had to pick one dish for the rest of your life, what would you choose?
Oh, that's easy. Momos. Just to make sure. Yeah. Just to make sure it's the one with dole and not the atar thing. I love it as well. But like, I don't know. There's something about dole momos that I even try to have it as often as I can, pretty much every other day, wherever I go.
I thought I was a massive fan of momos, and just having it like once a week, I thought like, you know, I was really getting into it, but I think you've just taught me.
No, I mean, you know, it's something I love, something's familiar, and you know, it's pretty simple. So
100%. Now, if you could go back into Nepal's history, any time that you wanted to experience or just see what that was like, what would you pick?
Very interesting. So I recently have been listening to a few of the things that a good friend of mine, his name is Joyce Guru, his grandfather is Ambar Guru. And I wanted to, and so the other day we rented out a car where there was no like in a Bluetooth or anything, and there was a series of cassettes. So he brought his grandfather's cassettes over, and then it looks like it's very strange, like it's so hidden. But then I'd probably like to go back into that, you know, period. I think his grandfather was doing all that around the 70s or like in the mid 70s. I'm not really sure, but then just going back and seeing what it was like, because they were doing what mainstream music, you know, in America or everything else was doing at that time in Nepal, and they were quite good at it. Like,
yeah,
it's when we talk about the you know, popular culture and everything, and what came over from the West and everything, it seems like it arrived late in Nepal, like in the 2000s or whatnot. But but it's not the case, and that's not really known. So I'd really like to go back and see what it was like, because I feel like the way it went about was they just said, oh, let's get together. We're a group of guys that want to make music, and we'll just, you know, just do the funky thing that, that the people in the West have been doing. And they did it in Nepal, and yeah, so I'd really like to witness that and how that was.
How fascinating. Like, a lot of things back in the time, because there's no social media or no way to, like, capture it the way we do now. Like, a lot of things are forgotten.
Yeah. That definitely is. The thing that I found fascinating was that they were quite, like, technically, they were really, really good. Like, the recording, because it was one go then. It wasn't, like, a lot of takes, and you had to be good and everything. And you could still hear the nuances of it, like the small errors and everything, but then that made it, you know, true.
Yeah, like raw as well.
Yeah. So I quite like that.
So before we get into where you are now, I always like to go way back when you were a child. So walk us through how your childhood was like, Sazen.
Sure. Fortunately for me, my childhood was rather normal. It was very comfortable, and I had a lot of support for everything that I did. So it was obviously in Kathmandu. I grew up with my father, my mother, and my brother, and my two dogs as well. And so that was what it was like. My growing up, even when I was as a child, my entire family's been very musical. Even though they might not be performers, everybody's been really passionate about music. So my father, I remember that, like, you know, as a child, my father would have these massive speakers in the living room, and then he would blast music all the time. And that's one of the things in Nepal that you can't do. Yeah. Bother about neighbors
and whatnot.
Yeah, that's something that I truly appreciated. And then I remember the first ever favorite album that I had was this live album. I think that's from 1990 or 1990, yeah. And that's by the band called The Eagles. And they did this live album called Hell Freezes Over. And the story behind it was that when they broke off, they were talking about, like, when they would play together. When asked when they would play together, they would be like, oh, when Hell Freezes Over. And then they actually did play together, and that was what it was. Particularly, there were two songs, Take It Easy and Hotel California, which everyone knows, right? But then, so that kind of a thing was the influence from my father. Also, there was Bryan Adams and UB40 and Bob Marley and everything that was going on. And as a child, maybe I didn't understand, but then at least you could get the rhythm of it, get the, you know, music of it and all that sort of stuff. So that was the Western side of it. And then my mother, she's always been the, like, a singer in the family, but she's very shy. And the way my brother and I, we learned how to sing was, my mother would be cooking in the kitchen, and then, you know, obviously the one good thing about load shedding is that we got a lot of FaceTime with my, you know, with our mother and everything.
Silver lining.
I know. <right? laughs> And then we'd be in the kitchen, and then she'd be, you know, like, singing, and we'd be singing along with her. And obviously she was, the technique would get better, at least when we were children. And then, you know, that's how we pretty much learned singing. And the people she appreciated in terms of music would be like Dada Devi and, you know, Gardner Das and all these kind of, and Deep Shrestha. And so it was really these old songs that I sang with my mother and my brother as well. So that was my mother. And my brother is definitely, how should I say, the biggest contributor in the diversity of your kind of music I listen to, because growing up, obviously, he introduced me to everyone from Britney Spears to Backstreet Boys to Linkin Park to, like, System of a Down, absolutely all across the spectrum. And so that's what happened. And the way I got into playing music was I really wanted to learn the guitar, and my grandfather, he bought this guitar for me for one of my birthdays, and my brother went and, like, took a few classes and he learned it, and then he taught me, and then from then on I taught myself and everything. So it's everything, like, you know, a lot of it has been, you know, a product of what my family, you know, how my family consumed music and everything. So that was my childhood, and that's pretty much how I got into everything, and that was mostly it. It was school, and then after school it was just trying to, you know, learn a new song or something and everything. Oh, and also my brother introduced me to John Mayer, which I believe is the biggest influence in my music. And then, you know, so that's definitely been there.
Researching for this interview as well, I was listening to all your songs all day, and I could see that little influence.
I mean, the thing about John Mayer that I really like, and the reason why I happily quote him as my, you know, biggest style influence of whatever the term is because his kind of a background and the way he went about was also not really conventional. It was around that time people were not really looking into blues and the classic music. But he was really obviously very influenced by Stevie Ray Vaughan, who also happens to have the same initials as I do, you know. But just,
the universe works in mysterious ways.
And I realized that he had a tattoo of SRV across his arm. I was like, it's meant to be. But yeah, and then BB King and everything, and he was a performer, guitarist before a singer, when he was, you know, around 14, 15, and that went on. So yeah, his style is definitely different. The way, like, when he first came out with the Inside Squares and everything. So the initial albums, they were really like not mainstream. It was just something him taking his own style and making it his own. So that's why I really like it. And one of the things that, you know, when watching his interviews, I heard him say, which is really, you know, something that I really attach myself to, is like, you develop your own style when you fail to sound like the artist that you want to, right? So it's like you try to do that and everything, and you. So that's pretty much what it is, and that's something that I believe what I stumbled upon as well, because I remember, like, when I was first starting to play guitar, the only thing I wanted to play was John Mayer. I was like, I can't just do that and everything, and then you eventually get your own style, you eventually have your own, you have your own method, but that's pretty much how things affect you.
You mentioned that your family was pretty supportive with you pursuing music and all, but was there ever pressure to excel academically as well? Like, coming from like a Nepali family and, you know, like how society is, like, oh, you need to be studying, like this and that. How was it in yours?
No. My parents were the most supportive parents ever. Even in terms of academia, they were like, okay, well, if you want to try music, yeah, take a year off, try music. If you want to just study that, do music. And I was like, okay. And they would be like, okay, well, in case of a backup option, as in terms of, like, I mean, if you do want to go into like university and all that sort of stuff, just, you know, have that on the side and like pay a little bit of attention to that if you do want to do it, but that's entirely up to you. And it was actually them, the conversation that I had with my parents after my SLCs were essentially, they were like, okay, what do you want to do now? And I'm like, well, I want to try the music a little bit. And they're like, okay, well, that's fine, do it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going to try it. And then after like a year or so, they were like, well, do you want to, like, you know, at least join a college? So you might want to go to university. I'm like, okay, that's how it's going to be. And then that's pretty much it. And it was very simple. And then I remember, like, I came to New York at my university and I enrolled. And they're like, oh, what major are you? I'm like, oh, yeah, accounting and finance. I'm like, okay, why are you not studying music? I'm like, well, I'm always going to do music anyway. I'm always going to have music, but I also want to do something else. That's different. And so I'm engaged or something. And then they're like, okay, well, and they're like, oh, but we think you should do music. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's really like
the
really,
opposite almost.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, it's like, because obviously music is certainly a very challenging industry, and the moment it becomes a job, it's kind of like it's a lot of effort just to, you know, sustain yourself. And if it does not really go your way, it becomes a lot of pressure. So for me, I'm a big advocate of maintaining the passionate side of things, where you do music for music, and, you know, and not letting anything affect that. But then again, that's just me. It's just, I know that a lot of people, if they want to decide at 18 that they want to do music and that's the only thing that they want to do, that's absolutely 100% valid as well. You know, it's just the way I've gone about it is that.
Yeah. So you create music when you want to create it, rather than someone else pushing you to, hey, like, it's time, you need to create something.
Yeah. So it's more like, okay, what do I want to write about next? And that's pretty much what the determining factor is. And I've been very fortunate to have a team behind me who supports that, and who also, like, pushes me to do that. Oh, you need to work on this, or you need to work on something new or something like that, simply because, you know, so that I actually stay active. For example, right now in COVID, it's like, it's been a very weird time, and nobody knows how to navigate this entire situation. But they've been like, okay, you probably want to write about what you're going through. You want to write about what other people are going through. Well, you know, whatever.
So just like guiding you as well, and not just saying like, oh, you're amazing, just do what you're doing.
That's a great thing. And I do think that's very important. I think you need people to be so blunt with you that they almost hurt you when they give you feedback on something that is not quite, you know, up to par.
Yeah.
And I've had times where I've worked on something and I'm just like, I played for them and they're like, oh, I'm so excited. I think this is it, right? I think this is something that I work on. And they're like, could be better. I'm like, okay. And then I go back and try to work on it and everything. That's happened so many times. And I think it's very important. I think instead of 5 songs, you'll come out with one. But if you do come out with one, you'll come out with a really good one, something that you're going to be proud of. So.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you went to Brooke for accounting and finance. Mm-hmm. Of all the different subjects that are available, what prompted you into finance?
Well, it's something that my father tried in his career as well in the past, and I wanted to understand that as well. And obviously in Nepal, this is where things get a bit wonky. In Nepal, people are like, oh, you want to study for being a chartered accountant and you want to go into this, you know, like this.
Of course.
I don't know if Nepal knows it as finance. I think Nepal knows it as commerce. But then it's
business. It
was kind of a business. It's a strange dynamic in Nepal where, I mean, I don't know if it is anymore, but the way it was everybody thought that science students came first and then commerce students came second.
And arts at the end.
Yeah, at the end. And somehow after you finished college, the best thing that you could go for was chartered accountancy, which was a bit hypocritical. And then if you went to like a different country, like to New York or London and really joined a really good finance firm, then you were like at the top of the, you know,
like the big four, you know?
Yeah. Didn't quite make sense. But anyway, so I just wanted to see what my options were in terms of like a career where I could be comfortable, you know, and finance was also something that, well, I was interested in and I wanted to explore. And really it really wasn't so much of a thought as where I wanted to be like, oh, I really want to understand the ins and outs of the entire economy of the world. And it was something that's like, okay, I'm interested in it. I wanted to give it a go. Let's go. Because that's pretty much how you do with anything in university. Yeah. You pick a major and everything. And science was not something that I wanted to pursue actively. And mathematics was definitely something that I wanted to do. But then it was kind of a vague point where I didn't know really how I wanted to, like, you know, go about it. So it was like, okay, business seems great. So I'll just take something that allows me to do anything in business. So,
yeah. And I can tell from just your journey throughout Baruch as well, like you're interning at so many different places, KPMG, Morgan Stanley, getting jobs at JP Morgan and things like that, like after graduating, it seems to me that you don't take things lightly. Mm-hmm. Once you've committed to something, you research and you actually put everything behind it and go for it. Because if you just said, oh, I'll just do accounting and just like people can cruise by. Like, you know, 3.0 GPA and they just cruise by, get an accountant student job at like God knows somewhere and they'll live. But you're like, like if I'm going to be doing this, let me see what this is about. So that was pretty cool to see as well.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you think that way. I do think that I got really fortunate about the, you know, the resources that I had and the people that I had, the mentors and everything to guide me through the way. But then, yeah, it was also a little bit of what you said where if I was going to do it, I wanted to see, okay, what is it like to actually, can I make it at the top? You know, and then that's what it was. And first, I started off with accounting. So I went to Morgan Stanley and it was a corporate tax internship job. And then I was like, okay, maybe the finance side of it is more for me. So, and then when I did go to KPMG, it was more on the strategy and the strategic investment side of things. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to make a full switch of finance. And then finance obviously is between JP Morgan and Citi and all that. So I started, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give that a go. And fortunately things worked out in that sense. And yeah, that's what everybody aims for. I just happened to be, you know, in the right place with the right people and everything to actually be able to give that a go. And I'm grateful for the opportunity.
And around 2014, you came up with your first original Azamatre. What were your expectations at that stage when you put that out in the world?
Absolutely nothing. I wrote Azamatre in my living room in Nepal, in Kathmandu. And it was simply like, it was written in one afternoon. It was not with an intention to put it out. But during that time, the way I would put out things was simply just like, oh, I record it and I show it to all my friends and all my friends come in the mic and like, oh, so cool. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is cool. But I just wrote it then. I couldn't record it in Kathmandu and I came to New York. And when I was in New York, I just purchased this microphone and this interface, and I had my laptop, and I was just like, I'll just record it without any proper knowledge of anything. I just recorded it, and I'm like, okay, I'll just put it out. And that was pretty much it. There was not much thought that went into it. Everything was quite an amateur job at that point. And yeah, like I said, it was just something that I wanted to put out and see if, you know, I don't know, it just see what happened with it. And that's where it all started. And one thing that I've noticed that, you know, whenever I talk about Altamatra is it's quite strange for me how I decided to come to America, and the first thing that I wanted to put out was a Nepali song, and it's like entirely, and you know, that's a good thing because I think that really started this snowballing effect where I just wanted to write more and more in Nepali, and yeah, I suppose that's what happens when you leave Nepal, you know, yeah, to a lot of us, but that's what happened.
Yeah. Coming from Nepal as well to Baruch, starting something different, finding your like feet in the ground, as you say, how was the transitioning for you like?
It wasn't that difficult, to be honest, because while I was doing accounting and finance, I was in this music club, if you will, mm-hmm. right? And then, which is like a society. And then you go in there, and I was the only student who was like in this business major, but he was still like always hanging out with the music kids. and we were there and doing this concert, like, you know, twice a semester and things like that and everything. And yeah, so it was quite easy for me. It was not like to be honest, I fortunately it didn't happen to me, but I did see a lot of other people who came from Nepal as well into Baruch. It was a kind of a culture shock because that university is very like, because it's in the middle of Manhattan, and then like everybody's running after internships from the get-go, from like a freshman year, and everybody's already in suits by the time they're in sophomore year and everything. It is kind of a culture shock, but fortunately, like I said, I was able to find a group of people who I, you know, connected with rather well and was comfortable with. So,
Now, when you listen to your songs, they feel very personal, and just listening to them, they transport you to this like a special place in your memories and takes you to a happy place. I wanted to ask you, how do you get inspired to write such songs and create such like heartfelt melodies?
First of all, that's it. A lot of compliments, so thank you. I'm glad you feel that way. In terms of inspiration for the songs, of all my songs, I've only had, like, you know, a personal, I sort of say, a gender or, you know, attachment behind two of them. So they were like Sukumbasi and Titi Bidar. Outside of all of that, it's a story that, this is why I really like listening to other people's stories and really understanding it. No, it's always been somebody else's story. Also Hawaii Jazz is also my personal thing. So for these other songs, it's like every time I have a chat with, you know, one of the people that, like, who is close to me, and then I figure out their story, or I see something and I really like, I'm curious about it, and that's what it is. And just to give you an example, Hatari Te Patasi Dei was a story of, you know, one of my close friends, and one of my best friends, and the way that he was going about, you know, like, he was going through the things he was going through, and that was pretty much, I was like, okay, is this what this fellow's thinking? And I was like, okay, I put myself in his shoes, and then I was like, write that entire song. Bahad was something that, you know, we started as a, that was a project that started when we had a chat with Priyanka with the series that she wanted to do.
And that was for Just Another Love Story, wasn't it?
Yes, that's how we started off. And I wrote the song, essentially, there was a song that they wanted to like feature in the series, and I was like, okay, let me just write a new one with this kind of a scenario in mind, and that's how it came about. And then I'm trying to go through what songs I have. This previous. Oh, right, and somebody else was also, I suppose, a bit more related to myself, but it was also related to me and one of my, you know, closer friends going through like a similar story where we were in a career path that we didn't quite, you know, feel really, really, really attached to, and something that we felt like we were out of our element in that. And so that's what I wrote about. Like, okay, it sounds romantic, but it was more about, you know, talking to yourself about your being somebody that you're not and everything. And Sigmund Musk was entirely personal. So that was pretty much something that I wrote with one of the team members, and he's also one of my best friends, Nurbu, and we wrote that in one evening. That was quite an evening, and we sat there and And then, yeah, so we had the entire track done one day, and then the next day I came back and I was like, oh, I've got the lyrics for it. And it was very, like, you know, I had a chat with him. And so it was pretty personal. So I suppose it just came about.
So do you work on the lyrics first, like the songs, the feeling behind it, or does the music come first? How do you put together a song? I'm a complete noob, so like...
No. It's very random. It's sometimes it's the music, like for instance, Sukumbasi was the entire music came first.
Does it just come to you like out of nowhere?
I think it's a lot of trying. I think it's like, so, you know, you sit down and like you've got this idea that you want to work with and you just try to make it work. And sometimes it happens in one day, sometimes it happens in 6 months. And it's really not like, there is no set time for me. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm leaning towards, you know, it's sometimes troublesome because you want to have a method and not want to identify what works. That's how you grow and get better. But yeah, it's completely random. For instance, like I said, Tsukumbasi was music first. Kurakani was lyrics first entirely. Like Kurakani was meant to be just an acoustic song that was meant to be like 1 minute 45 seconds long, not a lot. And then I wrote the lyrics for it, and then obviously one of the team members was the reviewer for it. I was like, I'd write it, and I'm like, dude, what do you think about it? And it's like, yeah, it could be better. He's like, what do you think about it? It's like, could be better. What do you think about it? Could be better. And I'm like, finally, he's like, oh, this is it. And then I went and worked with the music and whatnot. So that was like that. And Putki Dani Zorwin was, so I'd heard this tiny bit of a sample, like that was like, I don't even know, like 4 seconds long or 5 seconds long in one of my friend's songs. And I was like, oh, dude, do you mind if I play around with it? And I did it. And then the music came first for that one. And then the lyrics came later. So it's really, I think, I haven't figured that one out yet, but I think it's really about like what it is that you want to write and whether you come across or, you know, are able to produce a piece of music that, you know, resonates with that kind of a feeling.
I think you're one of the few artists who are like very involved with your music. You do it from songwriting, singing, to producing, composing, everything. How long does it usually take you from, say, getting the idea of the lyrics or the tune to actually putting it out there?
That's also very arbitrary. The quickest it's been is Putki Dani Zorwin was... the music was put together in a day. The lyrics was put in a day. And I gave it like 2 days for the final, like finalizing bit. So it was like a 4 day kind of a thing. But on the other hand, like the other songs, Barayli Logio took months and months and months because so many reiterations and stuff like that. And I wanted to add elements. So it's pretty arbitrary. Then I would say that it's, more about, like how happy I am with a song. But in terms of putting the hours in, if I'm just talking about the audio and engineering bit, that's probably like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days. The songwriting is pretty much, you really can't put a you know,
time like on it. Yeah.
Time period on it. But yeah, so it's a difficult one to answer, but it varies, I suppose, but that's my answer. It really varies and there's no certain set time.
Because what I wanted to highlight is, your listeners only get to see the final product, right? Like you putting out all these songs and we're like, oh my God, this is amazing, like 4 or 5 minutes. But the amount of hard work that goes behind, not just yourself, but you've got a whole team there with you. If you've got a video out, you've got like the whole thing, production video and everything going on. And a lot of the times people think, oh, like, you know, it must be easy for this person.
I wish it were.
You know, I wanted to highlight the behind the scenes part of things as well, because it's not.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Actually, that's something that's very important, the topic. So obviously, you know, I've got my team and everything, and I have to say, people don't realize how much effort goes into the video part of it and actually making a video sensible, and there's a certain story behind it and actually getting it to like this certain level of quality that you want. And exactly. Especially when you do that with limited resources and everybody's in all the other different places, that's very important. And one of the controversial things in Kathmandu, so not Kathmandu, Nepal, is how people, you know, look at piracy and how certain people think that it is, you know, it is just another way of publicity. But that's really not the case, right? Because, for an example, I thought it, but that's the thing. I can't believe I screwed my own song's name. I always
are you sure you wrote that song?
I don't know. I thought it, but that's the thing. But so what happened was we've got two cameramen using two cameras, pretty simple, like handheld cameras and everything. And of course, there was a gimbal and whatnot. But then there was also an entire cast member. We had the production manager. We had the person who edited it. We had our entire team for the artwork and absolutely everything. We did the casting for it, and the actors were really hard working.
And you also shot it in the most busiest place in New York City.
Yeah. And we had to do that. And we had to do, there was a certain scene that we had to take twice. Everybody had to put on the same clothes the next day and everything we had to do. So it was a lot of work from the team. And that is what needs to be highlighted. And one of the things that I've noticed that I've been told is the end credits, nobody sticks around for it. And that's kind of like the sad, kind of like, I'm not really happy about it, because that's where, even in just a second, you at least have to address all the effort that's gone into. Yeah, because I do the music bit so far by myself, and then I know how much of a hard work it is. But on the same side, for the video sides of things, from the editing to like shooting it to like, looking at the small details, so I have no idea about it. And the only thing I can do is like provide input, like saying, oh, this could be better or that and whatnot. But then the people who actually do it, it's a lot of work. And it's definitely, yes, it is. At the end of the day, it's like 4 minutes, five minutes. But then the number of hours that's gone into it can go anywhere from, 72 to like hundreds of hours. And you never quite know how much.
Mm-hmm. Now, how has your creative process or all this production side of things evolved from your first music as a matter to, say, Put Kids On?
I don't quite know if it's changed all that much. The only thing that I would say is that I keep learning a little bit, at least I try to keep learning, and mm-hmm. I feel like I've come up with new ways that I did not know before that's really helped in my production process, because I've tried to keep it as basic as possible in terms of the entire process, because it was still the same thing before. You get an idea what you want to write about, and then you write about it, and then you finish up the production of it, and then you put it out there. So even today, it's the same thing. It's you pick what you want to write about, and you write about it, and then you make it, into something that you think represents what you want to talk about. Yeah. And that's pretty much it. But I suppose it's the order that's been refined in that I recognize that there needs to be a certain idea or a message that you want to put out. And then I work on it. And then I actually try to stay true to what it is that I want to communicate. So I think that's what's gotten better. Whereas earlier on, it was just about, I'm going to sing of love. I'm going to write a bit. And I'm just, I'm just going to imagine that I'm sitting across a person and I'm going to try and impress them with all the fancy words and stuff like that. It's definitely been this refining of the process where you just say, okay, just make sure you stay on the topic while you write, as you travel throughout the lyrics and the song.
Yeah. Now in 2020, like start of this year, I think that's when Downtown Flux was also founded. Mm-hmm. And when I went over your LinkedIn a little bit, I saw that you've also done a bit of career pivot there into like software engineering.
Right.
So what made you take that leap? Like you've got so many things happening, right? You could have just focused on music or stayed, like you're already doing so many roles within JP Morgan, like you could have stayed there as well, but you made this extra leap there.
For me, it's just like, so finance was obviously great. I quite enjoyed it, but it's also an industry where you are expected to put it first over anything else. And at the same time, there is not a lot of creativity involved, right? There's a lot of intellectual side of things is like, it's definitely challenging and you have to, prepare yourself with the social skills and soft skills and whatnot. And definitely you have to get better in terms of your knowledge and everything. But in terms of like pure creativity, there's not quite a lot. So that's why I wanted to do something where I would be building stuff rather than taking what's built and then just running with it. At least that's how I felt. I'm not trying to generalize an entire industry. It just to each his own, and that's
all
how
the finance professionals come in after you. After this, like, excuse me.
No, but it's like a lot of my friends, they're still in finance, and they absolutely love it. And like I said, just because it wasn't my true passion doesn't mean that, you know, it's not.
It can't be somebody else's.
Yeah. So that's what it was, and I just felt like it's something I just wanted to do, something where I wanted to be more creative, and software engineering was something that I wanted to go into, where I could say, okay, if I wanted to build something, I want to know how. And that's pretty much how I went into it. And like, fortunately, I've gotten an opportunity where I'm learning more about it right now. And let's see how good I get. I'm not sure how good I am, but again, it's really about work and practice. So let's see.
And what are the plans with Downton Flux at this stage?
It's a tricky one, especially because of COVID. Every one of our team members is in a different place. So we've got Nurbu in New York. We've got Kailash in Seattle. We've got Somya right now in Kathmandu, but he's probably going to be in the Netherlands. We've got Sharif in Kathmandu as well.
It's like a global team.
Yeah. So it's earlier on, we would have like, you know, imagined like us working together, like in a location at some point and whatnot. But at this point, it's been very spread out, so we don't quite know how to navigate that yet, because when we put that together Downton Flux, it was meant to be like, okay, we will probably convene, you know, often, and then make things happen, but then that's been put on hold a little bit. But so all the North Carolina, Seattle, like London, Netherlands people will come together at some point, and we'll make that happen, hopefully. Let's see.
What about music? What are your plans? When can we hear something new? Are you working on anything new at this stage?
I'm trying to work on something new. I'm trying to navigate what it is that the next thing will be about, what the next song will be about that I write. And as soon as I figure that out, I'll let you know. That's always my answer. I don't quite know that yet. It's really about, like I said earlier on, figuring out what it is.
But when it hits you, it's going to be... Yeah. There.
Right. I just hope it's not too long. I just hope it's not too long, because obviously there's a lot of people behind me, supporting me, and they're pushing me to like actually do something that I resonate with. So let's hope that comes sooner rather than later.
Now, what I love about your journey, Sazan, is you're not only pursuing like an unconventional field, but you're pursuing both conventional and unconventional field. So I wanted to ask you, what kind of fulfillment do you get from each field?
It's really just about like the engagement of it, right? So mentally and emotionally. So music is definitely the emotional side of things, where you like say, okay, this is how I am, this is my identity, or this is how I get to be myself, and I really get to like express myself in any way. Like, you know, I can pick any genre, I'll just make it out there, and it's something about that you just express yourself in. The other side of things is just a standard normal life scenario where you just say, okay, what it is that I want to work on next, what it is that I want to grow at, what skill do I want to like get, and how good do I want to be in that, and then that pretty much plays into the entire struggles of life, where you're trying to find a place to stay, and you're trying to like have your own life and have the social dynamic and everything. So that's pretty much what it is. The fulfillment I get is essentially like my from my professional, like the career side of things. It's really about how far I've been able to develop myself and how good I've been able to get in terms of whatever I'm focusing in. And in terms of music, it's really about do I have something that I wrote that I feel is true of what I want to talk about? Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Do you think you'll ever go full-time with your music?
As far as I'm concerned, I am full-time with my music. In terms of if you're asking if I am only going to do music, I hope so, but I'm not really sure, how I'm going to go about it, but I hope so. So that's certainly the hope. I'd love to be just doing music. At that point, I do wonder if the challenge is going to be, how else am I going to engage, keep my mind engaged, right? Because When you're doing music and everything, you cannot just, you know, like, I mean, you obviously can just imagine scenarios and everything, but what I'm saying is, like, when you live certain aspects of life and then you write about it, you know, that's pretty authentic because you've actually written about something that people go through.
Yeah.
You just imagine things, it's wishful thinking. Yes, it's about, oh, I want to be in the isolation of my own device and everything. And that's a great idea. And I get that people really resonate with that, but sometimes it's just about, oh, I am not happy with what I'm doing in my career and I'm just going to, you know, like, I want to do something else, and that's somebody else, right? And then sometimes it's just about, oh, I've got this person that I really want to tell, you know, I feel what I feel about them. You just write it. So it's like real life, you know, things and scenarios are very important as well. So it's like what I'm saying is, yes, you can just sit around and then write about it, but then you sometimes, I do feel like sometimes you do need to like actually live those scenarios for you to be able to write, because you can't always think about life.
And I guess there's also that danger of when it becomes your like only source of sustenance, then you've got to always be on that, I guess, train to like produce something new, make something new. And
right,
that pressure might be there as well. Like when something you love becomes your job.
Right. I see that's something that I've said as well. Then at the same time, I do wonder if it's, you know, something that people use as an excuse, like to not do it, because there are definitely so many people, like Nepali and otherwise, who are doing this and everything. And it takes a lot of courage and risk. And yeah, that's definitely there. But if that's really what you love, then I don't think that's ever going to be an issue. It's obviously like sustainability is going to be your concern as well. But then you, that is already assuming that you're going to fail. I mean, it's a challenging industry, but yeah, it's not an impossible industry. Like if it were, it would not exist, right? I mean, the world is thriving in terms of arts. And I had a chat with one of my friends recently, and how New York is viewed, you know, mostly as a finance, you know, focused city and whatnot, but it's not. It's actually about, you know, when people talk about New York, it's really about the arts of it, you know, and that's where you hold your head up high. So I didn't do it because I've been occupied by something else, and I feel like it's going well for me in terms of like supporting me or the way I want to think about it. But then I absolutely admire and, you know, support anybody who wants to take it full time. And I like I said, I hope to be able to do it. And I don't know what the blocker is at the moment, but then it's something that I'd absolutely love to do.
One of the things with this podcast is also delving into the idea of success. A lot of times growing in Nepal, you have all these ideas set in by the society about what success looks like, which then you sort of, you're not in terms with it when you grow up. So now that you have done so many things within finance, accounting, and now changing your career as well, dabbling in music, getting so many things out there, what does success mean to you?
That's a very difficult question. That's a great one, but it's very difficult. But for me, I mean, it's pretty simple, right? From the career side of things, it's really about, are you happy doing what you're doing right now? And do you feel like you're growing? I suppose, yeah, growing. That's actually a great way to put it. I would say for me, success is whether you are growing and getting better at something that you enjoy doing or not. So in Korea, it's like, okay, like I said, that's also the reason why I switched. I'm like, I did not feel like the exact place I was there, I felt like I was learning anything significantly new where I felt satisfied with it. And I didn't feel like I was learning, you know, growing as much. Mm. So I made the switch, and hopefully this is going to like fulfill what I was looking for. But then that's what it is. I felt like I wasn't, you know, headed towards success in the way that I didn't feel like I was headed towards growth as much as I wanted to. So I, you know, that was what it was for me. In terms of music, it's the same thing. I would say rather than the number of songs that I put out or whatnot, I would say it's really about, you know, am I growing in terms of the ideas that I talk about and the way I talk about that, and the, you know, am I learning new things technically in terms of playing, you know, a certain instrument or, you know, making some kind of music. So it's really about, is your growth, you know, continual? Is that, if are you growing? That's pretty much the question. And if you are, if the answer is yes, then as long as that answer is yes, I feel like you're successful. Yeah. For me, at least,
Of course. Personally. Yeah. And I think that applies to anything you do, right? Like you said, whether that's software engineering part or music, as long as you're evolving, as long as you're happy with your evolution, then you're successful.
Definitely. I would say so.
To wrap things up, Sazen, if there's any advice you could give to someone who is struggling with their path or struggling to go for their passion, what would it be?
I'm not really sure if I'm qualified to give advice to other people, you know, especially because I also have things that I want to, you know, that I've struggled with and I figure out as well. But if my past or any of my experience is anything to, you know, grab inspiration or at least advice from, I'd say something that I've felt and has been useful for me is to be honest with yourself in pursuing what it is that you want to pursue. Like, don't do things just for the sake of doing it. And it goes to career or music. Like,
everything.
Don't write a song or like write a piece of music just because you want to. Like, do you connect with it? And at the end of it, when you do have it, no matter how amateur or professional it sounds or whatever, are you happy with it? And if it is, it's simple. Like, you know, like, it doesn't have to be lyrically so deep that nobody understands it. It doesn't have to be, you know, like it can just be plain and simple. But like, if it gets your message across, if it makes you happy about you doing it, then you don't do it. And it's really about like also in terms of career as well. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I cannot go into music and all that sort of stuff. Well, is that what you want to do? If that's yes, and then if that does not make you happy, yes, would it? Would you still be willing to, like, you know, do that, knowing all the challenges? And if it's yes, then do it. You know, just be honest with yourself. A lot of the times we juggle things a lot, and I feel like because of the social pressures and everything, we try to like mold our, you know, thinking
idea.
And it's just like, if that doesn't make you happy, don't do it. If being with somebody doesn't make you happy, don't be there. If you're not happy in a certain situation career-wise, don't do it. If you're not happy with not doing music, if you're not happy with not doing, you know, dancing, if you're not happy with not pursuing fashion designing, well, then pursue it. Do it, you know. And like, if you, like Coldplay says, if you never try, you never know. And that's something that I figure out. So, well, if you fail, at least you tried and at least you're happy. But with that idea, I also think that I don't think there's anything such a thing as failing. So like I said, if it's representative of what you want to say and what your message is and what you feel like you connect to, it's there. It might not have 20 million views, but then, you know, that's you, and at least you've got something
you've tried that you're
proud of. So and once you start trying, I don't think you truly stop. It's just like you stop maybe putting it out there publicly, but then that's not the only way you can create something, right? Because like I said, there are things that people don't listen to that are still fantastic. And you know, just because it didn't get a lot of popularity does not mean that it's not authentic and, you know, genuine and genius.
100%. Yep. I think there are so many times when people just like to complain about the situation and not do anything about it. If you're going out with friends, like, they'll talk about how much they hate work and like they'll just keep talking about it for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And then when you just ask them, so what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
And they would have done absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
If you're really that miserable, then do something about it.
Yeah. And that's very important, right? Because I think it's true in every society, but especially in the Nepali society, it's true simply because of what's expected of you socially. It's like, oh, you have to do this work, and maybe it's like a job with a really cool, you know, title, but then you're
at a cool back.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you come back, and people don't really want to do it, because I've known a lot of people, and they're working at top firms, absolutely top firms, and they're doing great. They're making so much money, but then at the same time, I've seen them leave their jobs and just like not care about it at all and just go back to Nepal and be like, okay, I'm so happy here. Like, you know, I might not be making like $500,000 anymore, but then I'm happy. And, you know, the people do that. And in Nepal, saying, oh, you've got a job. Why did you leave it? How are you going to take care of this? Obviously, you have to be smart with your finances and everything and your decisions. But then really, like, you know, is it really worth it if it's not making you happy?
Yeah.
You know, is it worth the trouble then? Because it's taken a lot of your time.
Exactly.
From 9 to 5 or even more, like 8 to 6 or whatever.
5 days, yeah. 6 days a week.
And then that's like you're not doing something that you enjoy, and that's really going to hurt you. And if, yeah, maybe you're going to get that bonus at the end of the year, but like if you don't have time to spend it, I mean, the way I think about it is like if you work an entire year, I don't think the only way you can celebrate should be a week somewhere in front of a beach wasting time. I really don't think that's, I mean, that's just my idea.
Just like getting drunk every weekend. Like,
yeah, you know? Yeah. And that's the culture. And like, you know, it's something that, like, that's why I said, if that makes you happy, 100% do it. You know, it's everybody like can tell me to bugger off if that's not what they want. And that's what it is. Like, just as long as it makes you happy, then do it. Otherwise, it's not worth it. At least I think so.
Mm. Well, Sazen, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed getting to know you, getting to know your journey, and I can't wait to share this with everyone too.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me. This was great and a lot less formal than I expected. So that's incredible. And it's been great talking to you about everything and you know, like thinking about things I haven't thought about in a while. So that's definitely important. And, you know, I think that's definitely positive from my end. Thank you so much. All right.
My pleasure. And you can just write a song for me. That's fine.
I'll definitely get on that right now and see what happens. But anyway, yes. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And please stay good. All right.
Bye.
Great.
Bye.
Bye. Cheers.
Yeah, we do.
As always, if you enjoy these conversations as much as I do, please share with your friends and family. If you'd like to share your feedback, you can reach us on Instagram at hamro.yatra or email askhamroyatra@gmail.com. I love hearing from you, so keep them coming.